Please be seated. So it's a little weird talking about what's really called the Annunciation, when Mary finds out that she is going to be pregnant with Jesus in September. But here we are. Because Mary, as it turns out, according to the higher-ups in the LWML who decided the text for today, is a wonderful example of what it means to be a willing servant of God. I'm just going to throw this out there for a second and let it like kind of linger as we dig in. This should probably stay in the room, so just between you and me and the, like the six cameras that are pointed at me. I kind of resent them picking Mary, but probably not for the reason that you think. So I just want that floating there for a second. Now, to really understand the moment or the significance of the moment of Mary saying, all right, I'm God's servant, let it be according to his will, you actually have to go back earlier in that chapter where Zechariah, who was an old priest married to an old woman, who they as a couple were unable to have children, which in that culture was really a source of shame and just ongoing pain. And while Zechariah is in the most holy place, which is really only entered like once a year as priest, so this is potentially a once in a career, maybe a couple of times in his career he will enter this space. It's like one of the most important things he can do. He is there, and boom, Gabriel, the same angel who announces things to Mary, appears and says, okay, guess what? Your wife is going to have a child. You're going to name him John, and he is going to be great. And he was great. In a lot of ways, during his lifetime, he was more popular than Jesus. He will have some kind of parts of him and some habit, like he will become a Nazarite, like from the womb. He will be separate and special. And Zechariah, this old, supposedly wise priest who's supposed to know better, says, yeah, but how? Because my wife's old. And Gabriel, I love his response, says, I am Gabriel. I stand in the presence of God. And if I were writing this story, I would insert the phrase, are you sure you want that to be your response? And then he decides that Zechariah is going to have a roughly 9-month timeout. And so he emerges from the most holy place unable to speak, and his wife conceives. Correlation, causation, I'm not going to go there. But so you've got, and Luke is kind of a genius in the way he tells this story, because you've got like this old priest who knows these stories. Like, this is his career. And you have a young girl. It's hard to say exactly, but just based on what we know of the culture, maybe about 14. He's supposed to know better and just whiffs it. Like, God creating a family by using a family that was unable to have children is sort of a thing he does. Like, there's a long precedent for that. Abraham and Sarah, Hannah and Elkanah, whose son is Samuel, we heard about him, the parents of Samson, and so on and so forth. Zechariah's response should have been, oh, I know this story. Wow, God is moving. But instead, he's like, huh? He should have known this. And what Gabriel reveals to Mary has no precedent. There is no expectation amongst any, what we would call extant literature, any surviving literature from roughly around that time, to suggest that anybody thought for a moment that when Messiah came, he would be the Son of God, born of a virgin. Now, I know that there's like kind of looking back this passage in Isaiah, but nobody connected those two. That connection was made after Jesus, with people looking back going, oh, huh, okay. He was right, huh? And so Mary has no reason, like she has no reason to understand what Gabriel is saying, and honestly, she probably doesn't understand it all that well. And yet, in her faithfulness and her piety, she's okay with saying, all right, I'm the servant of the Lord. So you have the priest who should know better and the young girl who has no reason to get anything, and he whiffs it and she gets it. Like, that's intentional storytelling. And it places her in a position of immense respect. Now, here's the reason why I kind of resent, don't tell anybody, the whoever chose this text, and hopefully they're, I don't think they'd be in this room, but whatever. Mary, the mother of Jesus, obviously was a servant of God in a very unique way. She's also arguably one of the most consequential human beings ever to have lived. We think of Jesus as divine, and he was and is. We sometimes do so, though, at the what am I trying to say? Words fail me today. Expense. Thank you. we sometimes emphasize Jesus' divinity at the expense of his humanity. And we forget that Jesus had to grow up. He had to be potty trained. He had to learn to talk. Like, he didn't emerge from the womb clean as a whistle and float around being God all over the place. He was a boy who grew up to be a teenager, who grew up to be a man. Mary changed his diapers. Mary raised him to know God, to understand who he, as a Jewish boy growing up into a Jewish man, is, and what that means in the first century. And Joseph, of course, would have as well. It is probably not that hard to understand why God would have chosen very specific people for this task. It doesn't mean they're perfect by any means, but it means they're exactly who Jesus needed to parent him. She's so revered that really from early on, she after like the Bible ends, starts to be referred to as Theotokos, the God-bearer. And in a moment where she had every reason to be afraid, which is why when Gabriel appears to her and starts talking to her, he eventually has to say, okay, don't be afraid. Like, don't freak out. she resolves to be the servant of God. It's probably safe to say that there is not a single person in this room who will serve God with that much consequence. Unless I've really misread the room and don't know any of you at all. None of us are going to achieve that level of service. I mean, we just aren't. Here's what I mean by that, because sometimes we and it's probably a cultural thing, we emphasize kind of our importance as individuals and what we have to offer. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but it leaves some blind spots. My son and I are kind of watching through the corpus of anything produced by really by Peter Jackson and whoever made the Rings of Power, because we really love Tolkien, J.R.R. Tolkien, and I love The Lord of the Rings. Yes, I've read the books, I've read a lot of the extended stuff too, because I'm a massive nerd, and I really like the TV and movie adaptations for the most part, and I'm stuck by, I've been struck by, like, especially the scenes of those really large, inspiring moments of courage, especially like when there's a big battle, and you've got some of groups of your heroes who are leading all of these people into very dangerous territory, and they're about to charge into the big bad, and they don't know what the outcome's going to be, and that's always really inspiring and really motivating. And if Tolkien-style high fantasy is not your thing, like think like Braveheart or Gladiator or any other movie that depicts immense courage by a lot of people led by a select few who do great things. And it's kind of in our I don't know, maybe, I guess it's our cultural influence or something. But the most natural thing to think, especially if you're a guy, is that, man, I want to be one of those at the front, one of those leaders, one of those heroes. But let's be realistic. I'll speak about myself and I'll let you figure yourself out. Even for stuff that has maybe a slightly more historical bent. The stories of kings or leaders mustering an army to fight off the big bad invaders, which have happened from time to time throughout history. Would I be one of those big, well-armored, mounted knights, well-trained and versed in the arts of war? No. Knowing me, I'm going to be one of the guys in the back who was yesterday farming, and all I have is a shovel, and I'm just hoping that nobody else charge. Because realistically, the majority of us, vast majority of us, are just those regular people. Like, the big, great, inspiring stories speak to us deeply. At least they do to me. But my life is not filled with those big moments. It is highly unlikely that I am going to change the world. Unless I've totally misunderstood the trajectory of my life, and honestly, I don't want that kind of pressure anyway. And it's highly unlikely, again, unless there's somebody here that I just really don't know, that is going to change the world by serving God to the extent that Mary did. Service to God, service to others, is, of course, of utmost importance. But sometimes it can feel a little bit of like a letdown looking at some of the great stories from the Bible and thinking, yeah, but this is, I mean, I'm never going to do something like that. And so it can feel a little like a letdown. But as you start looking, and you can start to see it maybe develop in maybe the book of Acts, if you look, kind of look in the right places, that this movement that is quite literally birthed from Mary, and then, of course, really led by Jesus, he's the most important one, this movement that is kind of sparked by his teaching and him saying very strange, crazy things. We talked about this even last week, that if you want to be if you want to be the greatest, learn to serve, learn to receive like a child. In other words, learn to be the least. That if you want the most respect, put yourself in the lowest of positions. Like that kind of thinking did not exist at the time of Jesus. If you look at the broader Greco-Roman world, it would be absolutely absurd. In that world, and especially at that time, you care about your family and your business partners who are kind of like family anyway. That's it. The idea of caring about anybody who is not directly connected to you just doesn't really come up. And then you get this guy, Jesus, who starts saying things like, yeah, actually, love your enemies, pray for those who persecute you, serve the least among you. Absolutely radical things to say. And then goes and demonstrates this by dying a death that was so horrific and so taboo. Great Roman orator Cicero will say, you should never even mention crucifixion. Which means that Jesus actually meant what he said. And then as Jesus goes into his grave, and then God raises him from the dead, he starts this new reality that is based on that moment, that low, low moment, and then looks back and takes everything that he taught very seriously. So, like, you start to get within the first maybe two generations of the history of our people, followers of Jesus, these weird pocket groups that actually reach out and serve those who have nothing to offer them. They get a lot of weird accusations because that is so strange. They occasionally get persecuted because they are so bizarre. And then, within about 250 years, the emperor of Rome becomes a Christian, which I think maybe actually validates that when Jesus says, love everybody around you without condition, maybe that's really how God wants it to be. But again, I'm willing to bet nobody here will become the emperor of Rome. There's a lot of things that have to happen before somebody could become the emperor of Rome. Unless I'm deeply mistaken, no one here is running for president, or either this term or the next term or after that. Like we're just regular people. So how do we make sense of that? What does it mean to serve and to value that kind of service? That is the theme for today. One of my great heroes, somebody whom I look up to very much and has very much influenced my thinking, former Bishop of Durham, Tom Wright. You've probably heard me talk about him before. Immense scholar. I think the number of books he's written is probably greater than 70 now. He put it like this. During the era when building the great cathedrals of Europe, and if you've ever been to Europe, you know exactly what I mean. Huge, amazing structures where every detail is meant to kind of draw your attention to the story of God. Not that they're all perfect. Some of them get pretty weird, but whatever. They all are meant to convey a sense of awe, to allow the visitors and worshipers to experience the transcendence of God as well as his nearness and tell the story of God and his people through all of their art. Just incredible works of art that took dozens and in some cases hundreds of years to build and untold amounts of resources and talent. But they got built one stone at a time. And there were many, many, many people, stonemasons and the like, whose job was to take a piece of rock. They were given dimensions, and their job was to shape a stone. Shape a stone to those specifications, and then shape another stone. And then shape another stone. Knowing that they will not see the results of their service. Because, you know, math is not that hard. They know that this is going to take 70 years to make. And if you're already 35 and you're living in medieval Europe, you're not going to live that long. So instead, they were given a task before them, and they did it. And many of those cathedrals stand to this day with untold number of artisans serving God, serving the church, doing what was put before them to create something of magnificent and lasting beauty, knowing that they would never see the outcome of their work. That feels a little more like where I'm at. And I'm willing to bet the same is true for you. That doesn't mean that as you serve God and you try to love others in the name of Jesus, that you will never see anything good come out of that. That's not what I'm saying. But sometimes, or many times, it is so easy to get lost in the smallness of who we are and what we have to do with the stuff put in front of us and the people that come across our paths who are in need. It's so easy to say, what is the point? Is any of this making any kind of a difference? Unlike Mary, who probably, or actually we are told, she had some dark times. She was there when she watched her son die. But then we have no reason not to think that she also saw him after he had been raised from the dead. For us, and for now, our job is to serve, to care for others, do the work put in front of us, shape those stones, whatever shaping those stones look like for you, knowing that we may not see what God builds out of what little we have to offer. But again, knowing that as the Apostle Paul will say in 1 Corinthians, our labor is not in vain. There will come a time in the restoration, resurrection, and renewal of all things where we will look back and see all of the ways that God has shaped the world using us. That those of us who play even small parts will have those small parts play or create echoes and ripples throughout throughout the world of humanity and throughout the story of Jesus. So yeah, our serving others isn't going to probably look, in fact, I can guarantee you, it's not going to look like Mary. But as we serve and care for others, we are taking part in something huge, something so large we couldn't comprehend it even if we wanted to, that we know we will be long gone before we get to see how it is all fulfilled, but we will get to see how it is all fulfilled. It started with Jesus being raised from the dead and will end with us being raised just like him. So shape your stones. Do whatever it is that God has put in front of you to do. Serve and love others who come across your path, as hard and as challenging as that can be. And do not give up hope when it feels like it just doesn't mean a thing. Because by the power of God's Spirit, it will endure. Amen.